Our story tonight in Nehemiah looks at the obstacles that Nehemiah and Eliasib and all of those that were working so hard to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, what did they have to overcome? What were the obstacles that had emerged to defeat them and to keep them from building the wall? You know, when good things are happening and God has a great plan, there's an enemy trying to discourage. And it was true in Nehemiah's day, and it's true in our day too. And so we should never be surprised, or we should really be aware that there's going to be an enemy that will try to discourage the good work of God, whatever it is. And this story is a story that reminds us of that and shows us that. I realize that the building of this wall was only 52 days, but boy, it seems like it was 20 years of things about the story when you look at it, but it makes it even more incredible that it was accomplished in 52 days for when they started the work. The work had begun. There were teams of men and women who were involved in the building, the gathering of resources, the organization, and so Nehemiah had done an incredible job when he arrived in Jerusalem. 3 days, and then he went out and inspected the walls, and then he organized the people and got them going. And you look at the time that it took to Nehemiah to do that, it's incredible what was accomplished in a short amount of time. Now, the book of Nehemiah covers a longer time frame than just the building of the wall, although chronologically there's some places in Nehemiah that aren't in necessarily chronological order. And so it can be confusing when you're saying, well, how long was Nehemiah there? And what exactly all happened during that time? Well, the truth is that it looks like Nehemiah spent this time in Jerusalem. He went back to the king who had told him to come back, and then he came back to Jerusalem later. And there was a second time that Nehemiah's work is recorded. But in this place, at this time, very early on, Nehemiah has been, as we looked at, he's been looking at the wall. He's been thinking of how it can be done and should be done. And he's done all this planning and organizing. And the work had begun. And in the last chapter, we read read some of those names of all the people that had really worked hard to bring about the accomplishment of the rebuilding of the wall. And I had said last week about how tall Nehemiah's wall was. It was thought to be about 16 feet in general. That's the general description. 16 feet. Now, the wall later that was built higher and stronger and would be there was about 40 feet tall. So about 2.5 times taller than Nehemiah's wall, but even the fact that Nehemiah was able to accomplish that is amazing. 16 feet, and all the stones and heavy stones that had been put in place and put back in place and all those things that had happened. But also, in addition to the working, Nehemiah has been watching. He's been watching the people. He's been watching the work. He's been gauging these enemies who are wanting to bring an end to the project. And Nehemiah has a vision that's been able to look in every direction. And as we read tonight, we see that Nehemiah is not caught off guard by the opposition to the building of the wall. It's almost like built into the project. It's built into the work of Nehemiah. But also, Nehemiah is encouraging the people. He is telling them along the way that God is in this and God has led this and God wants us to do this and God will give us strength. And Nehemiah is not only a great leader and a great organizer and you might say a great businessman in bringing everything together, but Nehemiah has his hand on the pulse of the Spirit of God, and that's the incredible part of his leadership. And I think about him, that's just so incredible. But then the opposition took place, trying to defeat the plans of God, trying to defeat what God had put in the heart of Nehemiah. And the story of the opposition to the wall in Jerusalem, to the rebuilding of the wall in Jerusalem, are found in two chapters of Nehemiah, chapter 4 and chapter 6. In between is one of those stories that were a part of the story, but not necessarily chronological, as for whatever reason, you have chapter 4 and then you have a break and you have other things that are going on, and then you come back to chapter 6 and you kind of have a completion of the story of the opposition to the building of the wall. We're going to look at chapter 4 tonight. I think we're going to read the 23 verses of chapter 4. So if you want to follow along, turn to Nehemiah, and we'll look at this chapter tonight. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are?" Tobiah the Ammonite, who is at his side, said, "What they are building, if even a fox climbed on it, he would break down their wall of stones. Hear us, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the men of Ashdod heard that the repairs to Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is giving out. There is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall." Also, our enemies said, "Before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them and will kill them and put an end to their work." Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, "Wherever you turn, they will attack us." Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords and spears and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "Don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes." When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to his own work. From that day on, half of my men did the work, while the other half were equipped with spears, shields, bows, and armor. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other, and each of the builders wore the sword at his side as he worked. But the man who sounded the trumpet stayed with me. Then I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "The work is extensive and spread out, and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. Wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us." So we continued the work with half the men holding spears from the first light of dawn until the stars came out. At that time, I also said to the people, "Have every man and his helper stay inside Jerusalem at night so they can serve us as guards by night and workmen by day. Neither I nor my brothers nor my men nor the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapons, even when he went for water." Boy, that's a neat chapter. That's a story of the best the enemy could do. And a man who trusted God, and a man who put in the heart of Nehemiah the continued ability to persevere in the midst of the obstacles and the opposition that were in front of him. There's so many things in this chapter, I think, that's just neat to read and think about for a little bit. Well, there's three enemies of the Jewish people and the resettlement of the wall in this story. The first one is a man named Sanballat. His name is mentioned several times in a prior chapter and here. And what we know about Sanballat is that he was a Horonite, which only means he was in the town of Horon, which is thought to be in Samaria, and that would make sense because he is there as head of the Samaritan army, and he was the governor of that area, and so that's where his base was. He was a Samaritan. He was from the area from which there rose opposition to everything about the Jews coming back and worshiping in Jerusalem. And the opposition would continue for a long time. This isn't the end of the story. It isn't the end of the history of the opposition of the Samaritans to worshiping God in Jerusalem. It goes all the way down to the story of Jesus. And some of the little things you read in the Gospels that kind of identify, and you can looking back and you can see that there is this animosity between those that are from Samaria, Sanballat and the Horonite, and the opposition to Jerusalem. Just one example, kind of off the cuff, when Jesus goes and speaks to the woman at the well of Samaria, she talks about, or Jesus talks about all her husbands and the one that she's not married to now. And she changes the subject and says, our forefathers believe that we need to worship. And she names a place on the mountain. That's the area where Horon was, not far from there. I looked on a map and checked that out. She was changing the subject, but even in that, you could see this little tidbit of information about Samaria. Our forefathers said that that's where we're going to worship because that's what happened. Sanballat was not happy with what happened. He went back and he worshiped. He didn't want the temple to be rebuilt at all, and he didn't want Jerusalem to be protected because he wanted the seat of the Jewish religion to be in Samaria, and it wasn't to be so. And so there's this opposition because it was not a Jewish religion. It was mostly idolatry. Well, who was Sanballat? He was the governor. He's called the governor of that area. And his title, he was appointed by a larger governor north in what we think of present-day Iran. I've read a little bit about him, and actually about Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem is all three of these men, their names are mentioned in other historical resources. And so the Bible gives us a little picture of them, but we also know some things about them from other things that we know that he opposed the Jews, obviously, and opposed the work of the Jews. And he seems to be the first or the main one that was opposed to the rebuilding of the walls. We know, too, that Sanballat was kind of progressively hostile toward the Jews, both in the book of Nehemiah and in the general story. We know that Sanballat was kind of the leader of the three, and he was very hostile and became very hostile. And then we have a man named Tobiah. And we do know some things also about Tobiah. We know that he is described here as the Ammonite. He was from Ammon, which is across the Jordan River and what we think of as Jordan today. And, of course, Ammon being from Ammonite and where it is in Jordan. And so Tobiah was from this area across the Jordan River. And he was known to be a Jew. In fact, he had come back and forth constantly to Jerusalem. Where Ammon is in Jordan is not very far from Jerusalem. I mean, when we think of distances, it's far less than from here to Harrisburg. You know, we are a little bit more spread out, but in the Holy Land, these places are pretty close together. I don't remember exactly, maybe 40 miles or so between Jerusalem and Ammon. Well, Tobiah was the governor of this area right on the other side of the Jordan River, but he was a Jew. And there were a lot of Jews that lived in that area. We also know about Tobiah that he was very treacherous, and he wanted and threatened to kill the people that were working to rebuild the wall. Tobiah was known as someone who was connected to the temple and wanted to control the temple, and Tobiah wanted to control the high priest and the priesthood. In fact, in chapter 13, there's another story about Tobiah that we won't take time to go through tonight, but if you read chapter 13, you'll find a story about Tobiah's treachery and his connection to Eliasib, the high priest. and how when Nehemiah comes back later on, he casts Tobiah out of the temple and clears his things out and says, you have no right, you have no place to have anything to do with this temple. And then Tobiah is cast out of Jerusalem, and Tobiah goes back to Ammon, and he builds another temple. So you have in Samaria the worship, partial worship of Yahweh, but it's mixed in with idolatry, and it's ugly. And then you have, on the other side of the river, the emergence of another temple and this mixed worship of more than one God, including Yahweh, but it was so full of idolatry that it was not at all what God intended it to be. So he had this temple built, and part of it was rebuilt and destroyed and rebuilt, but I was doing a little bit of reading about this. And this building in ruins exists today, and you can go and visit it. And in front of, or above one of the doorways in I believe it's Aramaic, is the word the Temple of Tobiah. So it's interesting that, you know, you can go back and you can see physical evidence of these rulers or these ones who were opposed to the building of the rebuilding of the walls. Tobiah was very corrupt, and I won't go into the fullness of the story, but also Tobiah was related to the high priest, as was Sanballat through their children and grandchildren. So there were political alliances that kind of, they were holding on to Jerusalem and controlling the area. And it was very corrupt. And Nehemiah addresses that. Ezra also had addressed that earlier about the corruption of the priesthood and partial case there. The third person is this man named Geshem. Geshem is an Arab. He was a ruler of the area south of Jerusalem that controlled really from the edge of Egypt, across the Sinai Peninsula, across southern Israel, and over into what we call Saudi Arabia today, the southern part, the Arabs. And so he was a ruler of this area, and he was very involved in the spice trade. And so this was an important trade route. And even Jerusalem itself was an important and strategic area. So you have Geshem to the south, and you have Tobiah to the east, and you have Sanballat to the northwest, all around Jerusalem. And they all want to control Jerusalem, because Jerusalem did have a lot of wealth and prosperity, and they didn't want Jerusalem to have its own leaders. They were able to manipulate Jerusalem. The whole area is still roughly controlled by the Persians. That's why you have the reference to Tobiah saying that what Nehemiah is really doing is rebelling against the king. He was hoping that word would get back to the Persian king, and he would believe that Nehemiah was rebelling against him and stopped the building of the walls of Jerusalem. Of course, that didn't happen, but that's what happened. This is kind of a visual map of these three leaders. There's Sanballat. This is Samaria. Right here is Jerusalem. You can't see the Sea of Galilee because the star's in the way, but that's up in here, the Sea of Galilee. Then you have Ammon, Tobiah the Ammonite, and somewhere around here is Ammon, Jordan today. And then down here, Geshem the Arab, and this whole area is controlled by the Arabs. And so you have these three kind of small kings, if you would, who are trying to control this area. And so they are squeezing Jerusalem, and they don't want Jerusalem to be strong at all. These local kings, Jerusalem is right in the middle of all that. All three wanted to control Jerusalem. It wanted to get its prosperity and its wealth, and it didn't want it to be able to control itself. So they oppose. They oppose the strengthening of Jerusalem. Back about 50 years before this, they had opposed the rebuilding of the temple, but that got done. You remember all the opposition about the rebuilding of the temple, and we talked about that when we were looking at the story of Ezra and his description. It's kind of the same thing back then. They were opposed to anything of prosperity of Jerusalem and the rebuilding of the temple and now the rebuilding of the wall. So there was this reaction by Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem when they find out what Nehemiah is doing. I don't know how long it took because, of course, the total time of building the wall was 52 days, but they had people in Jerusalem as part of the living there and culture there, so they would have found out immediately what was going on when people started working and rebuilding the walls. But there was their initial reaction, their first reaction to the hearing of the rebuilding of the walls. I call it their first round of opposition, and there's several of them, but there's two that we look at here in chapter 4, the opposition. Sanballat, when he heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and greatly incensed. And so Sanballat's first reaction is, what? They're rebuilding the wall? They're protecting Jerusalem? From who? Basically, he knew that they were building the wall and it would protect Jerusalem from him. And so he's angry. And at first, the reaction seems to be that he really doesn't believe that it's going to happen. And when you think about what seems like this building project that needed to be done for 150 years, now it started, and at first Sanballat seems to not even believe it's possible. Oh, that's not going to happen. So he makes fun of it. He ridicules it. It says there in verse 1, he ridiculed the Jews. And in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are? I think in Sanballat's words is he's doubting that this can be done. He doesn't believe that these small number of people, when you look at, I mean, it seems like a lot of people rebuilding the walls, and it was. But when you look at his army, and you look at his power, and you look at his influence, and you look at all of his strength, he doesn't think that can happen at all. He just kind of laughs at them. Oh, those crazy Jews. They can't get together. They're not going to be able to do it. And then Tobiah, who is right beside him, it says. Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side. So at the time when Nehemiah is recording this, you have at least Sanballat and Tobiah who are looking over this situation. Maybe they're at the wall or they're somewhere close. We kind of get the idea that they came and they went. And so they're in Jerusalem, and Sanballat and Tobiah are talking about this construction going on, and they're saying, they can't do this. There's no way that they can rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. It's just not possible. And this is Tobiah's reaction. He says, what are they building? If even a fox climbed up on it, he would break down their walls of stone. Boy, that's like really kicking the Jews when they were down pretty low, you know. I mean, he's looking at what they're doing, and he's looking at the rubble. He's looking at all this stuff, and he said, there's no way that they can rebuild the wall. So you have a little bit of a disbelief in the opposition. They don't want it to happen, but neither do they think that it can happen. Neither have they assessed correctly Nehemiah's resolve or that God is working to build the wall. I think Sanballat and Tobiah have missed it. That it's God who's doing the work and God who's clearing the hurdles and God that's bringing this about. So even though they have this reaction that starts with this, they miss that it's God who is going to bring this about. So what's happening to the people at this time? Well, they're discouraged. Not only is Sanballat and Mennonite or Tobiah saying and being recorded by Nehemiah, but also they're spreading the word. And they have their people, and they're walking among those that are working and saying, what do you think you're doing? You think you can repair the wall? And I just imagine they were sending out their people all across the work site. All those 43 teams of workers, and And they're just kind of making fun of him, saying, look at all that rubble. Look at that stuff. Do you really think that you're going to be able to do this? Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out. And there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. I have a feeling that not only were they tired, they had to be, but also they were listening to what the enemy was saying. And so the enemy was putting those words of doubt into them, and they were hearing that, because you go on here, not only are the strength of the laborers, it says, are failing, but also our enemy said here in verse 11, before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them and will kill them and put an end to their work. So they're tired. They look at this massive pile of rubble everywhere, and how can we do anything with this? But then they hear the words of the enemies that just want you to know, before you can even react, if you continue to build the wall, we will be in there and we will attack you and kill you. It's not just we're going to discourage you, but it's getting worse. And it's the opposition is being ramped up, that we're going to attack you and we're going kill you. Tobiah doesn't believe it can be done, but they continue to spread the negative news about it. The people were working, but it was not easy. It was hard work. It was physical work. They had the rubble. They had the enemy's words attacking them and discouraging them. So I just get this sense somewhere along this 52 days, and I don't know how far into it and all that, but I just get this sense that there was this discouragement in the camp. So what happens? What happens is the enemies are trying to turn the workers back, and they're fainting, they're faltering. In fact, it says they got the job about halfway done, and then it kind of came to a stop. So what happens there? Nehemiah did what Nehemiah seems like he always does when he doesn't know what to do. He prays. And so we have in this chapter two parts, one prayer and then a reference to prayer, where Nehemiah is doing what he does when he faces something that's difficult. He prays to God. He says, God, would you hear us? Would you help us? This is your wall. Hear us, O God. He says in verse 4, for we are despised, he prays. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders. Nehemiah prays to God and says, God, you see what's happening here. You see how they're throwing the insults and it's discouraging them. And then you go on down to verse 9. It says, but we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Nehemiah prayed and then he acted. I've used the term before. Some people like this term and some people don't. I believe that we should pray as if it all depends on God. And we should work as if it all depends on us. That God calls us to pray and trust and do the work that he gives us to do. And that's what Nehemiah does. He prays, God help us. The enemies are attacking, our people are faltering, and we don't know what to do. And he prayed and he trusted, and then God gave him a plan. And so right away, at the end of that, and we posted a guard day and night to meet this threat, Nehemiah shows great trust in God, but he also shows that he's going to do the task that God calls him to do. And so they persevere. They keep working. They keep moving those massive stones and small rubble, and they continue to work. And then we have a second wave of opposition. So they get back to work, and God's kind of given the strength to go on. And so when Tobiah and Sambalay hear that, they're really very unhappy about that. And so once again, they speak up and they threaten, and they're very angry again. But this time it says that they plotted together in verse 8. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against us. And so you have first this kind of light opposition, the words, the insults, the laughter, not really believing it's going to happen, but then they see that they're actually working and they're getting things done and they're accomplishing things. And so they begin to send the discouragers in to discourage them. And when that doesn't work, then they begin to plot, it says, and they begin to plan the trouble and to find people that will go and attack. And so you have in this second round, the first round's a little bit mild, the second round is not. They are going to physically intervene, and they're going to find ways to fight against and kill, stop the work. And so you have this second wave of opposition. And there's some other opposition to it, but... So what does Nehemiah do? Nehemiah takes on that opposition and he begins to defend. And he begins to assign the people to defend this part of the wall and that part of the wall. And you guys stay over there and you keep your swords in your hand. And he makes a plan and they begin to defend the walls. Therefore, verse 15, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places with their swords and spears and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the temple, don't be afraid of them. Remember, the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, and your daughters, your wives, and your homes. You have the faith of Nehemiah, and you have the action of Nehemiah. God is going to defend. God is going to work. What a great story of faith. A great story of this man who is going to stand and fight and do what God has called him to do. And they work together. Several things in this story, how they work together. They were to stay in that gap while the others worked. And then later on, if the trumpet blew, wherever it blew, they were to go to defend that spot. I mean, this, remember, is about at least 1.5 to 2 miles long, this wall. That's a lot of area. And there were a lot of gaps, and there were a lot of vulnerabilities. And Nehemiah says, we can't, each team can't defend their wall if the enemy army comes, if the army of Samaria comes. Wherever they come to the breach in the wall, they're going to be able to fight against those, that family that's there, and they're going to get in the wall. So this is what we're going to do, is we're going to have a system. If the enemy comes, tries to come through the wall, the trumpet is blown, he said, all the men will come with their swords, and they will defend together. They work together. Nehemiah had a great plan of working together. Teamwork, he does in an incredible way. This whole story is a story of faith and perseverance, every part of it. And in chapter 6, when we get more detail about some of these events and what it took to finish the wall, you have this combination of great faith and great perseverance, and God allowed a great thing to be accomplished in this city, in this place, in this time that had needed a wall for 150 years. God brings it about through this, through these people and what they do. Any thoughts or comments or anything about this story that you'd like to? Yep. They didn't stop working, but they had the sword in one hand and the hammer in the other. That's amazing. That's pretty neat. Sometimes it's probably like that. It's probably like that in spiritual warfare, where it's not like we can stop worrying about what the enemy's doing, or we can even stop thinking about that, I should say, but that we've got to be prepared. We've got to know we're in the battle and persevere and keep at it.